Now, this is Box to Box with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley.
Oh, what a goal!
For Chemist Warehouse, great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices, changing the mood of food.
Absolutely fantastic!
Hello and welcome to Box, the show that is everything football. You're with Rob Gilbert and Michael Edgley to run the rule over the past week in the World Game. First edition news with Willem van Denderen shortly. And in the spirit of Derek Dyson suggesting I conveniently took a week off when Liverpool lost a few weeks back, our former ITN journo turned pundit is missing this week. No doubt in mourning that along with the Reds, the Gunners have shot themselves in the foot, losing at home and likely handing Manchester City the title on a platter. We'll talk about that later. But first up, the A-League Women's Finals got off to a cracking start over the weekend and continue over the next fortnight with home and away ties to decide on which two teams will contest the grand final. After bowing out in an elimination final penalty shootout last season as interim manager, Melbourne City's Dario Vidicic has guided the Citizens to the Premiership in his first full season in charge and looking for the double. But in their way is a rampant Newcastle Jets. Full of confidence after upsetting Western United, Dario will join us shortly to talk about the season that's been and look ahead to the two A-League semi-finals starting this weekend. Then, it's been a long time since we've spoken to our next guest, but he was with us from the very start of the show back in 2015, and over recent times we've had the regular appearances of his son, Joey, who has become one of Australia's foremost football analysts. I speak of none other than former chief football writer with The Age and now senior freelance journo, Michael Lynch, to discuss the transformation at his beloved Spurs under Ange Postecoglou. Under Ange Postecoglou, I'll get it right. Yes, we hear you cry. You could have picked a better week, but we deliberately chose a week where Derek was missing. And yes, how Spursy is it that we talked to Lynchy Sr. after they've been flogged? Edge, it'll be great to have our old mate back. I don't know that we picked the right week, but hey, let's focus on the A-League Women's. That was a spectacle all of its own.
Yeah, looking forward to talking to Michael Lynch about Tottenham because there's a lot to talk about with him. You know, it's not just the weekend's big loss at Newcastle, but A-League Women's, how good was it? And you're right to talk about the Newcastle Jets. The rampaging continues. They've scored in their last three games. They've scored 18 goals in four matches. That's right. So they are well and truly a form team, and they come up against a Melbourne City that's had 3 weeks off, Rob. I'm looking forward to talking to Dario Vidic to see whether that's a bit of a disadvantage. But we can't go off the top of the show without recognising the fact that two superstars made a massive impact in the A-League Women's Finals. I don't want to steal any thunder from Willem, but Melina Ayres scored for Newcastle Jets the crunch goal that gave them the lead late in the game, her ninth in A-League Women's Finals, and Casey DeMont. She did it again. She stepped up to the plate, scored a penalty, and then saved her Central Coast Mariners. And it's a little bit ironic that Melbourne Victory is out of the A-League Women's, and it's fair to say, Willem, that they didn't recover from losing Casey DeMont in goals and Melina Ayres as their number nine. They struggled in that department all season, it appears, and those two players have shone in the finals while Victory's out the back door.
No, they have struggled to replace those two. I think from a broader perspective, well, they had chances, and Alex Chidiak was, you know, kicked off the park at Stages Edge. We were flicking a few messages between ourselves and saying that, that maybe that wasn't acceptable. At the same time, Kai Simon was missing chances, so that was a game that could have been settled in regular time. In the end, it was a nil-all draw that went to the penalty shootout, but it was a maiden finals win for the Mariners, and we know that they spent 13 years or so out of the competition, so in their sort of longish, if you know, largely dormant history in the A-League Women's, that's a big moment. Even more so for the Jets, that's their first finals win in 16 years. And you think of Cass Davis, who's played 10 seasons unbroken there. And as you say, they go in red hot against Melbourne City, who are coming off a long break. So, yeah, hugely historic moments for both of those two clubs of New South Wales in the A-League Women's.
Absolutely. And some interesting comments from Melina Ayres after the game saying that, you know, they'd had difficulties with facilities this year, the situation around the club's ownership off the field, and the girls had been united all the way through. They lost their coach, Gary Venegon, to the Chinese Football Association midway through the season. They've had some adversity to face, but their two gun strikers, Serena Bolden and Melina Ayres, have got the job done for them throughout the season and at the pointy end. And it was fantastic to see. And I'm looking forward to that match next week, just like I'm Looking forward to the Central. I think what's exciting about next week's first league semi-finals is that both Newcastle Jets and Central Coast Mariners have had great support this year, Rob. Really, really good support. So I'm expecting Maitland and obviously Gosford, their stadiums to be chock-a-block full of support. And I think that'll go a long way to helping those clubs stay in this contest for the second league.
Yeah, and before Willem gets into the news in more detail, we are going to expand on some of the related stories around both those games in stoppage time. You've got a couple of topics up your sleeve. And a few little sort of off-the-pitch remarks that we might make around that, because anybody who watched and saw some of the subsequent publicity around those games would have observed that there's a bit to talk about. Willem, why don't we – well, I guess you're probably going to talk about that again briefly, but get into the news, mate.
I think the other big story of the week, Rob, is the Oliveroos, and they begin their under-23 Asian Cup campaign against Jordan late Monday. But Nestori Irinkunda's non-selection took another turn since we last spoke. Having been initially left out of Tony Vidmar's squad, Vince Rogari reported in the Sydney Morning Herald that Marco Tilio's injury led to an informal approach to sound out Irinkunda's availability, which was rejected. Irinkunda's manager, Adrian Griffin, then spoke to SEN Sydney's Matt White and Mark Bosnich. Here is a little bit of what he had to say.
Basically, there's probably been about six or seven under 20 or under 23 camps during that time period, which he hasn't been called up to for some reason. No one has really communicated why he hasn't. But I guess whenever the team is called up, he's sort of gone. There was a international window in March. Mm-hmm. He wasn't called up to the pre-tournament. We kind of all put one on one together that he wasn't going to get caught up in April. So, we all sort of shifted our focus on, preparing for his, move. And that is, and hopefully getting Adelaide to the finals. And, he was indirectly contacted on Sunday night. But he already made his decision that he wanted to, finish the season at Adelaide United. I wasn't contacted directly by anyone at Football Australia. My understanding is that someone tried to reach out to him. It was a late call up, and he was he sort of switched his mind to, I'm going to try and get Adelaide into the top six.
Edge, a confusing interview, and well worth listening to the full 10 minutes if you do get an opportunity. I think a more than interesting sort of first glimpse into the Irinkunda camp. And no disrespect to Adrian Griffin, because agents, as with all professionals in any walk of life, need to start somewhere. But he is, or he has been FIFA approved for just over for 12 months. And that's fine. You need to build your career from somewhere. But Nestori is our most sort of special case. And I think that such a junior agent has our brightest prospects in his hands is more than notable.
Well, what's interesting to me was that it took a new turn with the post-match press conference with Carl Viet, saying that Nestor categorically wasn't approached, and that he'd had a discussion with Vidmar before the squad was announced and he wasn't going to be selected. So Viet put a new spin, which was that Irinkunda hadn't turned it down and that no one had spoken to him from the FA and that no one right through the process had spoken to him at all, which is not unusual for national teams. They don't. I think Graham Arnold talks to players that are very close to selecting in squads that don't get in to give him a reason at the senior level. But it's pretty much throughout the rest of the program, if you're not selected, you're not selected, and you don't get any welfare check. It's just announced. You're in or you're not. So what I found out, I thought the manager was probably tiptoeing around a very delicate issue, trying not to offend any of the important stakeholders in Nestor's career, be that Bayern Munich, Adelaide United, the national team set up, because Irinkunda has been involved in Socceroos national camps. So I think the fans had an expectation that he would have been in this Oliveroos campaign. And it just appears, after hearing everything, that Tony Vidmar didn't select him.
Well, based on Veer's comments, it all hinges on the term informal channel. And that was the basis of Rogari's piece. Yeah, exactly right. What does it mean? So that's where we're at.
No one's clarified.
As I said, I found the whole thing very confusing, and I think it's, the story's gotten away from both camps, and I don't think there's any winners. But the Olerus can still go to the Olympics, and he can be part of that if they're good enough to.
I think the big mistake was to make it through. I don't know what young Griffin, who's obviously the son of Greg Griffin, who's got an enormous pedigree in the game and knows his way around the sport very well, but I'm not sure talking to the media was a good idea.
By Leverkusen, Rob are officially Bundesliga champions. Their 5-0 win over Werder Bremen on Sunday, sealing the title with 5 matches to spare. Fans stormed the field on 3 separate occasions throughout the day at the Bay Arena after Florian Wirtz's second and third goals, and finally at full time. Leverkusen have been in the German top flight since 1979-80 and have finished second on 5 different occasions, and their breakthrough win ends Bayern Munich's run of 11 successive titles.
Incredible, Willem. We're going to talk about, I'm going to expand on that in stoppage time later in the week, and I've, with the help of our great mate producer, panel operator Adam Maloney, packaged up a nice little 2-minute highlight reel of what actually happened on the day. So, you know, it's interesting when we pay closer attention to some of these leagues and you learn a lot more about the history and the background of a club like this. I mean, how many curses have been going around for 120 years? This is sort of America's Cup-esque, really. They'd even trademarked the name Weiserkusen, which is the German for second place, and they have had extended the trademark to 2030 to stop anybody else using it. So, you know, Xavi Alonso, incredible performance from him, taking them from the bottom of the ladder to the top to win. Bayern Munich had, you know, what was a iron grip, as the Times said, 11 seasons in a row. Just amazing. So looking forward to expanding on it a little more in stoppage time later in the week.
Socceroos and Matilda Central Army, still time to book your place in France this summer to cheer on the Matildas as they seek to win that elusive Olympic medal. Zambia this week won their qualifier to join the Matildas alongside Germany and the USA in Group B. If that sounds like your go, head to ggatravel.com.au. 2 quality goals midweek as the Matildas defeated Mexico in Texas 2-0.
The cutback towards Mary Fowler. It might yet fall for Hayley Raso. Can she fashion a shooting opportunity? She can. It's a great effort. It's the opening goal. With Ford, Hayley Raso's goal in the 9th minute, the difference, but perhaps Ford can add number 2. Here she will. Classic Caitlin Ford. Cutting in from the left-hand side. A little shimmy, a feint, and then steering the ball inside the far post.
Tony Gustafsson pretty happy with this result. Edge at full time. Caitlin Torpy retained her place in the side after her breakthrough a couple of appearances against Uzbekistan. And there was a debut in there for Sian Fry of the Brisbane Roar as well.
Yeah, it was. I thought the first goal Hayley scored, Hayley Raso, the Mexican keeper, probably could have done a better job to stop that. But the second goal from Caitlin Ford was a beautiful quality goal, curling the ball in around the goalkeeper. They were good. They were good value, the Matildas. And I think that result gives them, reason to be quite confident about the leading to the Olympics, because that was not an easy task to go over to America and play the Mexicans in San Antonio.
Back to Germany, Rob. It's all getting a bit squeaky bum for St. Pauli. A 4-3 loss to 10th placed Elversberg has them down to second with 5 to play. They're still in an automatic slot, 5 clear of third. And let me tell you, you do not want to finish third, because then you go into a very convoluted and tricky promotion relegation battle where the odds really are stacked against the side coming up. Jackson Irvine did score the game's final goal, but his side were out of it at that point.
Yeah, look, it's going to be tricky, but you'd think that they'll get through. They've got Hansa this coming weekend, who are third from bottom and in a relegation battle themselves. So, as you say, squeaky bum, but Holstein Kiel, 58 points, St. Pauli, 57, then Dusseldorf, 5 points behind. No games in hand for any of them. But, similar to Leicester City in the Championship, you know, they had it locked and loaded and ready to just step up and have had a bit of a speed wobble. So hopefully the next few weeks are kind to them and they do go up. And look, wouldn't it be amazing? I mean, you look at Ipswich Town with Masluongo likely to go up and Jackson and Connor Metcalf at St. Pauli. We'll, you know, go from having a paucity of players in two of the great top-flight competitions internationally to having 3 in one go just by promotion alone.
Yeah, let's hope so. Mass on the score sheet for Ipswich Town, by the way, this week. So they are top, although Leicester in second have a game to play. Cam Devlin on the score sheet in Scotland. Hearts making up a little bit of ground on Rangers this week. They won 4-2 over Livingston. But we speak a bit of Kusini Yenge. Big Tete Yenge's brother, not happy. He'd been substituted by his manager. So he kicked a water bottle and abused the gaffer and then was shown a red card by the ref on his way out. And to close, good luck to Harry Kuehl and Yokohama F. Marinos this week. The Asian Champions League semi-final first leg against Ulsan Hyundai.
And isn't it great? Harry's master plan to be the national coach at the age of 60, coaching Australia in the first ever World Cup held on Australian, men's World Cup held on Australian soil edge. Looks like it's going to happen, doesn't it, mate?
How old will he be?
Maybe in his 60s by then. But I've had some money on it with a leading sports bookmaker, and I'll be able to buy that house in Toorak you keep on talking about that I don't live in.
You might be pushing daisies up by then.
It's the first master plan to ever include being sacked by Bury and Notts County and Crawley Town, Rob.
I know. Look, talk about Hollywood stories, mate. It'll make Wrexham look like a fairy tale, mate. So there you go. Anyway, boys, I'm going to take a seat on the pine and have a listen to you two talk to Dario Vidicic. You know, for a long time, Melbourne City were the team. They were untouchable, and then they fell from glory. But Dario Vidicic, who has got a pedigree of his own, former Socceroo, journeyman player around the world, and takes on the interim role last season and takes them to the premiership and hopefully for him, not the Jets fans, to a grand final. Stick around. That is next on Box to Box.
Box to Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Top spot on the A-League women's table was often described as a poison chalice this season. So what better way to overcome that than to grab it on the final day? Melbourne City lifted the premiership plate at Amy Park on Sunday. They'll look to add the championship in the coming weeks. And it's a pleasure to be joined for the first time on Box to Box by their manager, Dario Vidicic. Dario, congrats and g'day.
Thank you very much and good evening, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start a fortnight ago. You were in Perth as Sydney FC's loss to Melbourne Victory opened the door for you to leapfrog them. Could you beat the glory? You would have been mid-preparation on match day as that result was unfolding. So if you could take us into the day, the emotion as the two decisive results unfolded in your favour.
Look, we didn't have a long time because the game was before ours. So we were already at the stadium, we spoke about the scenarios. We just said, look, you know, prepare as we normally do. We'll sort of keep an eye on the scores. We'll let everyone know, you know, how it's going and whether or not, you know, that game would carry significance. I had a feeling all along that it would. So it was nice that did come about. So, but in terms of preparation, you know, nothing really changed. We go out to win every single game, we play our way, and that's to try to, you know, dominate the game, to score and to win. So in regards to that, it just, the only thing that changed was that we were playing for a trophy.
And that sets up a two-legged semi-final against the red-hot Newcastle Jets this weekend. They've scored 18 goals in winning their past four matches. It will have been 21 days between games for your side by the time you do take the field. So how have you gone about managing that gap in your preparation?
Look, we had a chance to sort of recover after the regular season and leading into the international break, especially after a tough trip to Perth. So, you know, that was a good chance to give the girls a couple of days off. But, you know, ever since they've been back, they've been training at a very high level. They know what's at stake. They want to win more. You know, we've now set our sights on the grand final. We've achieved one of our goals. We've got another one that we're out to achieve. So, you know, training's been excellent, and I think we're really excited for the week ahead. Now we know who our opponent is. So, you know, looking forward to a good battle with Newcastle, and that starts on Sunday in Maitland.
Dario, I'm a bit of a traditionalist. I think the Premier's plate finish on top of the table is, in my view, the real significant achievement of the season, albeit the playoffs are incredibly exciting and draw a great profile. But just in your own football career, your journey as a player and now as a coach, where does this achievement of taking these group of players to the Premiership of the A-League Women's competition, where does it sit for you in your career in the game so far?
Well, I haven't really thought about it, to be honest. I've sort of just kept moving, to tell you the truth. I was already sort of, you know, dissecting the game in Perth, what we could do better. Very happy. I think it was more sort of a happiness for the girls, for them to achieve that, you know, what they deserve, the football that they've displayed this season, some of the stuff that I've asked them to play, and, you know, how they've worked. So it was more a feeling of joy for them that they got to achieve that. But, you know, it's always special. I sort of carry the same sentiment that, you know, the premiership is, you know, over the course of a season, you know, 22 games, home and away, it's the same for everyone. You know, that we were the best team. So, you know, it's a great achievement. And, you know, we have to very quickly sort of put that aside and prepare now, because there's another trophy there for the taking for a grand final. And, you know, if we're in it or if we win it, that means we're hosting as well. So, you know, there's a big carrot there for us as well. To host the grand final is also a beautiful occasion, and it's one that we're looking forward to as well. So, you know, very exciting. And I think maybe then at the end, once everything sort of, the dust settles, the old saying goes, then maybe there'll be a time for reflection. But at the moment, it's still all systems go, and full preparation now for Newcastle.
We've had to face some adversity through the season. Obviously, the big talking point early on was in November when Holly McNamara went down with her long-term injury. And I expect, because she's such a talent, but she's had multiple knee injuries, I suspect that was a big blow for the group, more from a you know, personal relationship perspective. But you were able to overcome that. You obviously then had the really fantastic news that your goalkeeper and Caitlin Torpy were leaving the club to go to better things, which I know in a strange sense is probably a celebration, but it's also a dislocation for the team. But it must be pleasing that you were able to overcome those those developments to continue it on and win the league, because those three players have been, up to the point where they were not available, a big part to your team.
Yeah, look, definitely. I think, you know, with Holly, talking on her first, you know, I think the way she started the season, she was, you know, there'd have to be some argument to say that she wasn't the best player in the league. You know, she dominated in all attacking senses, goals, chances created. I think she topped the charts in basically everything. So, you know, and also just add that emotional as well for a young girl. You know, everyone's friend within the team, and just such a special person to see her again. You know, just got called into the Matildas, scores the winner, and funnily enough, against Newcastle, you know, in the last second, what was meant to be a joyous moment quickly turned, you know, very sour and very sad. So, you know, the group was shocked by that, because we already saw her already go down with a knee with us as well prior. So many girls have lived through that, and, you know, never it's nice to see your friends get injured. So, you know, that was tough, but, you know, they've been fantastic. She's also been fantastic. She's been around the squad helping, you know, doing whatever she can to help out. And so she's, even though she hasn't been on the field, you know, she's played a massive part as well. And then, yeah, as you touched upon with Liz and Torpy, also very, very pleasing, you know, to have two players, something we probably didn't expect at the start of the season, but, you know, that these things can happen, and just shows, you know, that we're doing the right thing, and the girls are able to showcase their talents. And, you know, we broke two Australian transfer records in the same week, and you know, very hard players to replace, but, you know, we've had to juggle a couple of things. We unfortunately lost Jules for an extended period for injury, so it felt like everyone in those wing positions were getting injured. So it was just a little bit unfortunate. Also with the internationals, with New Zealand having their qualifiers outside the window, which is, okay, something we knew about, but then when we take into those other transfers and injuries, all sort of happen at the same time. But yeah, thankfully able to navigate through that and still be able to come out on top. So I think it makes it even more special.
Well, let's just talk about a couple of the younger players that have emerged for you.
I can't go past Shelby McMahon, the junior Matildas captain, 15 years of age, scoring the winner in Perth to get you the championship. There's obviously more to her journey at Melbourne City than just that match, but I understand she's not from Victoria. Can you tell us about how it came about that she's at your club and just what her qualities are and what we can expect from her, not only in the finals but in seasons to come?
We try to keep an eye on all the sort of best young Australian players. And I was reached out from the Gold Coast Knights about her potentially coming. She was in Melbourne. So we brought her in during the school holidays. She trained with us and, immediately was very quick to see the talent that she possessed. And, I was very quick to head upstairs and talk to the club and to see whether we could bring her in this year. And speaking to her parents, we're probably more trying for the following year because of obviously coming from the Gold Coast and how quickly all that would have to come about. But, Shelby, once she was here, she loved what we were doing. She loved the club and she pushed as well from her side, and her parents were also fantastic in making that all happen. But, she's a special talent that, people should get very used to saying her name and getting used to her, because I think she's going to be, someone that's spoken about for a very, very long time in the women's game.
And another player I want to get your comments on that I think's had a breakout year has been Daniela Galic. I think she's been awesome for you right throughout the season. You must be incredibly happy with her development.
Yeah, she's a very good, very, very good player as well. So last season she was also very, very good as a 16-year-old, played, started so many games, and this season as well keeps developing, keeps getting better. We've utilised her in a 10 role as a winger, so she's been able to bring her qualities in different facets, impact games more. But she's just another one that's bound for very, very big things in the future. And couldn't be more proud of both of them and their development, and they've helped us tremendously this year as well.
So this week you've got to go up to Maitland and Newcastle to play the Jets. They've captured the imagination of the A-League women's community in the last few weeks. Those of us who follow the game closely, we know the quality of Melina Ayres, but Serena Bolden and Melina Ayres have been incredibly impressive throughout the season, and they have a good group of young players, that some of them involved in Australia's junior national teams as well, and a couple of imports that are doing well. There'll be a big crowd. You're looking forward to the game, and you must be looking at the Jets closely. They've been in a hot streak of form, haven't they, Dario?
Yeah, they have. And Melina Ayres, definitely. She's one that last year gave us three in the semi-final. So, and then we unfortunately lost on penalties in that one. So we know the danger that they possess, and also with Serena and the young players that you mentioned, they also got a very strong back line. They've hit really good form, going into the end of the season. We know it's going to be a bumper crowd. Newcastle really get behind their women's team. We've had some, when we went and played them in Newcastle at Sports Ground number 2, it was a fantastic occasion. Emily Van Egmond's first game, I believe it was. And, it was a massive turnout. They really get behind their teams there, which is excellent. So, and then on top of that, it's a final. It's the first leg. So it shapes up to be a fantastic game, one that's probably two teams that are in form. So, us as premiers, we have to make the tough trip first. They'll probably play a little bit with, a nothing to lose, I think, in a way, because, we come in as the sort of, the premiers and we've won the league. So, but, we have to respect them. They play, they got a good coach, they got a good team, and in this league, anyone's dangerous on their day, which we've seen many, many times this season, that by the ladder towards the bottom, still were very, very good teams that if you're not on, that you can suffer.
And Dario, I just want to ask a closer on your father, Rado, who's been a great servant of Australian football over a long period of time. You've both been involved in City at various in various capacities for long stretches and as part of much broader careers in the game. So what's it meant to have your father in the sport, in the industry, at the same club at times, and now having led the way as you've transitioned into management yourself?
He's been massive, massive for me, you know, just not just as for the transition into coaching, but also as a footballer, all the hours and, you know, the car trips and everything. That's where my love from football sort of begins. And, you know, I'm still constantly in contact with him, still talking to him. We always talk football pretty much every single day and, you know, talking about this game, that game, or latest trends or something else that we might have seen, or just general. So he's someone that I lean on a lot to, and, you know, ask for him, get advice from and bounce ideas off and that. So, you know, I'm very fortunate, very lucky to have someone, you know, of that quality and of that experience as well, that I can, you know, very easily speak to, and he's shaped me as a footballer and also as a coach now too. So, you know, I owe a lot to my dad, and, you know, and also he sort of helped begin this journey with this team. He brought many of these players to Melbourne, and you know, so he also plays a big part in this in the success that we're having as well right now.
Nice. Well, I'm sure you'll continue to lean on him throughout your managerial career, because it's off to a cracking start. So congratulations on your first bit of silverware. All the best for the next couple of weeks as you pursue a second, and thank you very much for your time on Box to Box, Dario.
No worries. Thank you for having me on, guys. Thank you.
Melbourne City women's boss Dario Vidicic there, ahead of their A-League semi-final against the Newcastle Jets. Stick around on the other side. We've got Rob, who will be back in alongside Edge, and an old favourite of the program.
Hey, boys, it's Chemist Warehouse time. We know the jingle well. Composed by the great Michael Burrows, a good friend of mine from Brand Music. He's composed a lot of the sounds of Australian radio, and we famously broadcast Box to Box, Willem, back in the COVID days from his studios, didn't we?
Who could forget? He was a momentary saviour as we needed a physical house before we went digital. And, yeah, never forget those couple of Thursday nights as the rain poured down in those studios.
The rain tumbled down in July, as the great Slim Dusty used to say. You can stock up and save right now at Chemist Warehouse. Look up that song on the internet, on YouTube, if you like. There's Panadol Extra Optizorb, 40 caplets for just $10.69. Well, Codral Cold and Flu Day and Night, 48 tablets for $17.99. You might be needing some of that over in the cold climes, but it's starting to warm up a little bit over there now, isn't it?
No, we're turning, Rob. We're coming good. But you gents, certainly, through winter, I've always got a couple of those stashed away.
Oh, absolutely. And Edge, the Zyrtec Hay Fever and Allergy 70 tablets for just $37.49. You've been away from Melbourne for a little while, but it's the hay fever capital of the world.
It is, isn't it? And I know that that Zyrtec stuff is gets the job done, Rob. So that's a pretty good price, I understand.
Oh, it's outstanding. So whether you're listening in the Northern Territory, in West Australia, in Tassie, somewhere around the world, we know we've got a lot of listeners across the world who listen to the podcast, Zyrtec. You won't get it at Chemist Warehouse, but it'll do the job. Click and collect to save time. Order online for delivery by Australia Post and get free shipping on orders over $50. We'll choose fast delivery for same day home delivery. T's and C's and charges may apply. Chemist Warehouse, the great savings are every single day.
To Box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyt's Herbs and Spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. Great to listen to Dario Vidicic there. Very exciting times for Melbourne City women's team in the A-League women's competition. But we have been looking forward to this next chat for a long time now. We've been talking to the junior of the Lynches for several years. Joey does a brilliant job in football, and he just keeps on getting better and better. But the man who started it all was, of course, his dad, the great Michael Lynch, former chief football writer with The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald, and now one of the most respected freelance operators there is. And he joins us now. Lynchy, welcome back to Box to Box, mate.
Oh, yes, good to be here. And I hope your listeners and everyone connected with the game has prospered. I was on the sidelines for a little while, but it was season-ending rather than career-threatening, I'd describe it.
Edge chuckling in the background there.
Yeah, but I'm sort of embarked on a new direction, new departure for myself, and yeah, we'll just see what's going to come up, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. So we'll call it the you've had the ACL Rico, you've done the rehab, and now you're back in full flight, mate, ready to burst the onion bag, mate. Now, I know when Edge jumps on, he's just going to absolutely take control here because he's got a lot to ask you. But it's just, isn't it so Spursy that we invite you on to talk about Ange Postecoglou and his influence at Spurs, and they go and get their ass kicked by Newcastle at St James's Park with a real tricky run to come over the next month. But rather than look at that, you are a Spurs fan of pedigree over many, many decades. You know the highs and the lows better than anybody. So just from the bigger picture point of view, I just want to take you back to when Ange's name was first mooted as a manager. Some of the pot shots that were taken at him in the English press when he was appointed, and what he's done through the broader season, if we can get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, it wasn't just the English press. I mean, you know, I'm on quite a number of Spurs Facebook groups and various things. I mean, yeah, initially I think the big favourite was Arne Slot, who had won the Dutch League with Feyenoord, if you remember, and last season, and had created this really exciting team. I think the oldest player in it was 25. And Arne Slot was being tipped by many as the likely successor to the unlamented Antonio Conte. But Slot decided to stay, rather like Xavi Alonso actually this year, decided to stay with his club, Feyenoord. Alonso, of course, deciding to stay with Leverkusen and reject Liverpool. And so Ange came in the frame then. Look, yeah, there was a lot of doubters and sceptics. And let's be honest, you know, it's not surprising, is it? I mean, in Australia, we know what Ange Postecoglou is capable of, having watched it. Well, in my case, I first interviewed him in about 1997 or 98. So I've been involved there watching the Ange career trajectory and writing about him for 26 years. So we all know how the man operates, what he does really well, and how he can change a culture and the setup of a club in pretty quick time. But in Britain, you know, it's the World League, the Premier League. It is by far the biggest league in the world by, I would suggest, almost every metric. You know, certainly with money, eyeballs, TV deals, player salaries, viewership, etc. So a relative unknown whose biggest kind of in European eyes, all his success in Asia was almost unimportant. You know, it was nice on the resume, but really, mate, what have you done? You won the J-League, you won the Asian Cup. Well, you know, Romania would probably win that. That's the sort of mentality people have over there about football and other parts of the world. The only kind of kudos he would have got was for winning two Scottish leagues, but then most people would say, well, you know, most guys who've watched football for 10 years, given Celtic's budget, would probably either win it or finish very close runners-up. So there wasn't a lot of credit being given to him before he got there. But everything changed, you know, with that marvellous start. I mean, they were top of the league, weren't they, after 8 or 9 games? Yes. They were unbeaten, I think, in the first 9 or 10. You know, they took a bit. I mean, I was in London at the start of last season, and I went to the training ground, went to the press conference, had a meet with him after just on my own for a little while, and went to the Manchester United game, the first home game, and they beat them easily. You know, it was 2-0, but at the end of that game, 61,000 people were just chanting his name. It doesn't take a lot to gain popularity, particularly with English football fans. But the corollary is also the case. I mean, I've seen people on websites today saying he's got to be sacked because of two heavy losses to Newcastle and Fulham about 4 weeks ago. You know, you can say that's societal, that the advent of the digital world and social media and instant outrage and faux outrage means people just vent. But unfortunately now everyone has a platform, and as we see in many areas of life, not even the most sober professionals are totally immune from the kind of psychosocial impacts of social media. But I don't think there's much danger of Daniel Levy paying attention to that. Ange has made it clear right from the outset that this is a project that would require, I think he said, about five transfer windows to create the squad he wants. I think he's done a remarkable job. At the start of the season, I said to people, Tottenham finished eighth last year after playing appalling football for most of it. And that was with the best or second best player in the league. Some people would have said Kevin De Bruyne is better than Harry Kane. I personally wouldn't, but they're both exceptional. But with Kane leading the line and the chief goal scorer, they still could only finish eighth. So I thought a year of transition, my view was, if he qualified for the Europa Conference League and they played interesting and exciting football, that would be a huge success. So to be where they are now, 3 points off fourth place with seven games to go, I think that's really overachieving.
Yeah, and with a game in hand, and let's not forget that
one game in hand. It'll be two after next weekend because they don't have a game, do they?
And correct, and also that 10-point margin against the team that just did beat them there. Even fifth spot, if City or Arsenal win the Champions League, it's likely the fifth spot will get you into the Champions League. So they're in the Europa League nonetheless.
Well, it might get you in anyway, because there's two extra places, and it'll be done by the coefficient. Mm. The Germans look like they might have locked up one of them, especially if Bayern dump Arsenal out. And Leverkusen, do the job at the London Stadium against West Ham. But the real spanner in the works was Atalanta winning at Anfield. No one saw that one coming.
No.
That's a different conversation.
No, exactly. Now, so I guess I just want to take you back to some of the remarks and pull some threads together from what you've said around his career. But as a person who has observed him from that sort of gestational stage of Ange, the sacked coach, the bloke who couldn't get a job, the bloke that's being absolutely smashed on SBS, to the not quite completed but mature product that he is now, is there something that you put your finger on in him as a person and as a manager that helps you to understand the success that he's had this season?
Well, there's two things I'd say to that. One, like all of us, as we age, or nearly all of us, we do develop and become a lot more clear-eyed about what we want. But more than that, how we deal with adversity and how we deal with various situations. So I think that's been a big part of it. But I would also say that from a very young age, and I've written this actually, I've done the foreword for the book that my former colleague Vince Rigari has done on Ange, which will be published later this year. And I've written the foreword for that. And I make this point in the foreword that when I first knew him, right in those days at South Melbourne, he had a very clear vision about how he wanted football to be played, tactically, stylistically, and he had a vision of what the game was and what it meant in societal terms and in terms of individual development and empowerment and the role it played in community. And I think that's been the kind of unifying fact about the way he's gone about things, that belief in, essentially, I think he sums it up. He says, I just want to create teams that my dad would be happy to go and watch. And I think that's been, it sounds, very shucks, but it is actually, I think, a kind of down-home way of expressing a wider view of football. So it should be attacking, it should be entertaining. None of his teams are ever going to play with fear. They're always going to go onto the pitch believing they can win. They're they don't park the bus. And he reiterated that to me in a hotel lobby in Rio de Janeiro in January 2000. I went to cover the inaugural Club World Championship in Rio. It was in Rio and Sao Paulo. South Melbourne were drawn in a group in Rio against Manchester United, Vasco da Gama, and a very good Central American team called Necaxa, who were from Mexico. They might have won the not the Libertadores, but they won the Central American Cup or whatever, qualified them for that. And, you know, he was looking, you asked him about facing United, who just won the treble, if you recall, you know, Champions League, FA Cup and English Premier League. And he said, well, we're not going to park the bus. But, well, that wasn't a phrase that was in vogue then. But it was basically, no, we're not going to defend. We're not going to sit back. And it was the same when they faced Vasco da Gama in that first game at the Maracanã in front of 60,000. And Vasco had a couple, you know, Romario or Edmundo and people who'd been in Brazilian World Cup winning teams. And they didn't sit back. They didn't try and frustrate and play for a draw. They tried to play the game on their terms. And I think that's the modus operandi, the one kind of fact about him, that he will play the game on his terms. Within that, there can be tactical variation. It's not just about there's only one way to play and do plan A better. That's largely it, but there is variation within that.
Lynchy, since leaving Australia, he's had a remarkable success at Yokohama, Celtic, and now at Tottenham. If I take you back to the dying months of his tenure as coach of the national team in Australia, he did have a stressful exit. He sort of fallen out of love with the media, and he felt that a lot of the important people in the sport in Australia weren't on the same page as him. So let's now transport to this time. Six games to go, including Arsenal, Liverpool and Manchester United. I sense that there's a lot of people in England awaiting with their baseball bat to whack him. Do you think there's any added pressure or prejudice still exists from the English football public about a man from the Antipodes, you know, coaching at the top of the Premier League? And do you think that they're waiting for him to fail?
Well, probably Arsenal fans, aren't they? But and Chelsea supporters, yeah. And basically supporters of all the other London clubs would be, I'd imagine. But in the same way that I have a great sense of schadenfreude when I see Chelsea in 12th place, you know. But that's just football, and that's just fandom, you know. No, I don't think they want to hit him with a baseball bat. I do think there are some who. You know, the honeymoon period was fantastic, and he's cultivated a persona, and he's confident in dealing with the media. I mean, he was very prickly towards the end here, overtly so, I thought, and way too defensive, and he didn't need to be like that because he had the runs on the board that he didn't really need to worry too much about what was being said about him, but perhaps it's different in your own home country and your home market. But over there, he's managed to really play the media very well. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that. One is he's an older man. He's not some, you know, 42-year-old who's just climbing the ladder and the big time or pressure situation for the first time. I mean, pressure situations are akin to the Premier League, you know, managing your country in the final of a continental competition in front of its own fans. That's a pretty big pressure situation. Taking a team to the World Cup to play against, you know, really good opposition against the defending world champions at the time, Spain, in 2014, you know. So he's faced a lot of those pressure situations. So I don't think he's fazed by the pressure side of dealing with media. And he's I think a big help for him is that English is his first language, you know, or Greek may have been, but he's been in Australia since he was 6 or 7, so he's utterly fluent in English. And a lot of managers in the Premier League weren't or aren't still, you know, and that gives him a kind of edge because he can speak in nuanced terms, and he, you know, like when Antonio Conte was speaking in his second language, he would have to use basic terminology, and sometimes that could be misunderstood. And so I think that's been an advantage for him. But another really big point is that because of the way he's come through and he's had his ups and downs, and, you know, we all remember, not just was he sacked from the national team jobs and had the infamous fallout with Craig Foster on SBS, but, you know, when he came back from Greece that time, he couldn't get a job anywhere. And you know, he was managing Whittlesea, wasn't he, in State League One or something?
That was only
14 years ago, 15 years ago. And you know, he used to appear, I used to be on Fox Sports with my dear departed and much missed colleague, Mike Cockerell. And you know, other people would be on Fox Sports FC, Andy Harper and that. And Ange would be part of the panel often, you know. So he's kind of had a lot of dealings with the media, and he's had those ups and downs that have given him, I think, just a maturity and a sense of perspective. And I think that's what a lot of the serious, if you like, writers really appreciate, that this is a man with a hinterland. He hasn't just lived, you know, Pep Guardiola is the, you know, probably the world's most successful, best known coach. But Pep has kind of been in that elite football bubble all his life, hasn't he? Junior at Barcelona, player at Barcelona, came through the coaching at Barcelona, and then went from Barcelona to Bayern Munich and then to Manchester City. He's never been outside the elite bubble. I guess a guy like Arteta's the same. Played at Barca as a young man and a junior, playing in the Premier League, in that football bubble, coached at Manchester City, then coached at Arsenal. Always been the elite bubble. And I'm not saying they're one-dimensional as people, but because I don't know them and I have no idea what their interests are and what they're like away from football. But Ange can demonstrably show that he's not one-dimensional by referring to his life in football. So that actually gives him a kind of a point of interest, which I would think endears him to quite a lot of the media and has given him quite a good platform to build on. So I think there would be fewer waiting with baseball bats than perhaps you might imagine.
Now let's. Well, you know him so well because you've been at the coalface with him through his whole journey, and I know him well too. So I know that after losing 4-0 to Newcastle, he won't skip a beat. He'll go back to work and think about the next match. But
well, he won't be happy. I mean, you know, nobody's going to be happy. But yes, he's made the point always that it's the program and the process, and there will be blips and downturns within it. Yeah.
So put your prediction hat on. If we're talking to you in 5 years' time, what has he achieved with Tottenham between now and then?
Well, I think he should stay there. I mean, assuming he continues on an upward trajectory, he's 58 now. This is his first mega job, isn't it? You know, he's not like one of these global Mourinho, a Conte, a Tuchel, whatever. He's not in that kind of category where he bounces from mega club to mega club. Although I think with Conte and Mourinho, those days may be over now. But I mean, I think it would be fantastic if he, as long as the trajectory continues upward and he continues to get the backing of Daniel Levy and Scott Munn, obviously, and they all remain in situ, and the funding comes through to allow him to upgrade the sort of players he wants. It'd be great to see him still there in 5 years' time, building the kind of dynastic legacy that the great Bill Nicholson did in the 1950s and 60s, where Bill Nick managed Spurs for, you know, I can't quite remember, I think it was nearly 20 years, but, you know, one first British team to win the FA Cup and League double, first English team to do that in the 20th century, first English club to win a European competition when they beat Atletico 5-1 in the Cup Winners' Cup final in 1963. first British team to have won two European trophies when they won the UEFA Cup in 72. I mean, that's a legacy that Nicholson had and created that kind of, well, he didn't create it. He was building on the legacy of people like Arthur Rowe, who came before him. But I would love to see Ange Postecoglou staying there for a length of time, having a great deal of success and having his name elevated to that pantheon at White Hart Lane.
Beautifully wrapped there, Lynchy. We've been waiting for a long time to get you back on the show, mate, and we couldn't think of – there's so many subjects that we could have got you on to discuss, but there's none closer to your heart than this, mate. So,
Yeah.
So, look, thank you, mate. And you know, the old dog has taught the young dog quite a few very nice tricks, mate, because Joey is doing a bloody brilliant job in football.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. But look, before I go, can I just give a plug for his website, JDL Media? I've actually written a piece for it. It's the first time I've ever done it for him. So he's now my editor. And it's run today, actually. It's on Nestor Iraconda and why he won't fade from the spotlight despite what Carl Viet might hope. And, yeah, everyone can get on that site, sign up, subscribe, buy him a coffee and whatever, make a donation. Because without that happening, and like yourself, independent, you know, like your website, your program, podcast, and independent media doesn't exist, because the mainstream media looks like it's pretty much given up on everything bar the Socceroos and Matildas, doesn't it?
Exactly. Well, we all know that they'll be back there during the good times, mate. But they've pretty much exited the game for the most part. So you know, I was having a look at your X handle and noticed that Substack link that you'd posted that article. So it's an excellent one. We were talking about Nestor earlier on. So for anyone who got a taste for it, wants to talk about, listen to or read about it in more detail, then they should jump on. Lynchy, we're going to say farewell, my friend.
Good luck.
But we will, now that you're back, mate, we're not going to let you go.
All right. Take care, then. All the best to you all. Bye. No, no.
The great Michael Lynch, former chief football writer with Fairfax Newspapers, Nine Publishing, The Age, The Sydney Morning Herald. He is an icon in football in this country and more broadly around sports journalism, and we're really proud to call him a friend and one of the people that helped us get this podcast up and running. Okay, stick around. After the break, World Cup Corner on Box to Box.
Willa, 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 everybody's going to buy Hoyt's Spices. Everyone's going to save a dollar or two. Everybody's going to buy Hoyt's Spices, yeah.
Willa, willa, willa.
Thank you, Willem. I was waiting for it. Now, Edge and Willem, do you both like a little bit of southern fried chicken with 11 herbs and spices from time to time as a treat?
Do I look like I like fried chicken, Rob?
But just from time to time. It is a treat, though, isn't it?
It is a treat, yeah. Not every day, every other day.
But if, Willem, you were going to make it at home with 11 herbs and spices, do you know what those 11 herbs and spices might be to make authentic southern fried chicken?
Do you have the secret recipe, Rob?
I do.
He's got the secret herbs. I was going to say, I've got no idea what they are, Rob, but I know the brand to consult.
Exactly, you do know, and it's Hoyt's, of course, at Coles, Safeway and Good Independent Supermarkets. So this is what you want to do if you've got a craving for southern fried chicken by any brand name, regardless. Whether it's 11 or 12 or 13 herbs and spices, write this down. It's a podcast, so you can rewind and listen. You need a tablespoon of paprika, 2 teaspoons of onion salt, 1 teaspoon of chili powder, 1 teaspoon of black pepper, or you could use the 4-colour peppercorn mix, which Chad Maloney now has in his house, 1/2 teaspoon of celery salt, 1/2 teaspoon of dried sage, same of garlic powder, ground allspice, dried oregano, dried basil, and dried marjoram. How's that? 11 herbs and spices. What a coincidence. There's a couple of things more. You want to mix it up with some flour, a little pinch of brown sugar, and some table salt, and then you want to dredge your chicken in there, some egg white. You want to double dredge it once you've put the egg white on, and then you deep fry it, and it's going to be the best southern fried chicken you've ever eaten, gentlemen. How about that?
Next week, Rob, I want those 11 herbs and spices in formation. I'll have the 4-coloured peppercorn mix in goal, and then you can fill out the rest of the team sheet.
See, Willem, that is why you're paid the big dollars on Box to Box, because you picked that up just where I was leading it. Not. Anyway, well done, brother. Coles, Woolworths, all good independent supermarkets. That's where you're going to find Hoyt's, and you can make that delicious southern fried chicken.
fill those empties with Hoyts spices, yeah.
Box to box.
Can you believe it?
For Chemist Warehouse. Great savings every day. And Hoyts herbs and spices. Changing the mood of food.
And this could be the most crucial goal of all.
Yes, this is Box to Box. It's been a while, but it was great talking to Lynchy Senior, the originator of the Lynch Dynasty. It's here that he's doing as well as he is and loving his football as much as he ever did. Okay, it's World Cup corner time. We've got a couple of subjects we're going to range over. Willem, I guess we can find a thread to the Champions League in World Cup corner somewhere.
A lot of these Champions League players play at the World Cup, Rob, because they're very good.
They do, yes, that's it.
Yes, and they'll also be at the Euros later on. Four really high-class legs. First legs in the Champions League this week. It was a little while ago as we speak now, but they need to be discussed because they were all crackers. We could see three of the four semi-finalists from Spain, with Barca and Atletico taking leads over PSG and Dortmund into the second legs, which are going to be played very shortly. And Real Madrid drew 3-3 with Manchester City. And the quality of goals in that draw, Rob, I'm sure you will agree, were just no less extraordinary for the quality of player that were out on the pitch. I mean, you see these guys and you think they should be scoring goals, but when they go in, they still take your breath away. Foden, Guardiola, Valverde, all amazing.
Oh, it was incredible. And again, you know, we've just got the luxury these days that if you don't have all of the streaming services and you can't watch all of the games, regardless of whether you do or you don't, that you can catch up on 20 matches over the course of a week with these fabulously edited highlight packages, apart from one that was on Optus Sports where a goal was missed on the weekend. That's another story altogether. But no, you're right. Real Madrid at home, they just find a way, even with Foden, De Silva and Guardiola putting three in the back of the net in what was, not quite an imperious, but a solid. This is not the Manchester City of old. This is a Champions League winning Manchester City who now know how to win games. And to go to the Real Madrid den and see them to a 3-3 draw was amazing. But I was listening to a commentator on Talk Sport, and he said he was at the worst game of the lot, Atletico Madrid v Dortmund, and it was still a cracking game.
Oh, well, Sebastian Haller's goal was, I think, the AFCON hero edge of La Côte d'Ivoire. His goal was brilliant to bring it back because they were getting battered early, 2-0 down they were, and it could have been 3 or 4, and they have done very well to escape with a 2-1 deficit going into the second leg.
Yeah, they're a chance in the second leg now, and you're right, he's a superstar, Haller. He's really emerged out of AFCON and has had a really good end of the season at Dortmund.
Edge, are you concerned? I mean, you know, in all seriousness, you know, we'll take the lighthearted football rivalry banter to one side. But Arsenal, they grabbed the draw late in that home tie, and now they go to Bayern. Admittedly, this is not Bayern of old, but it's still a Bayern with a Harry Kane, who are looking for some silverware in an otherwise dire season for them. And they go to Bayern. Are you concerned that similar to Liverpool, who had that disaster against Atalanta at home, admittedly, that they might be prey to Bayern in a pretty hostile environment?
Yeah, you'd have to think so. Absolutely. It's not the result that Arsenal fans wanted in the first leg, obviously hosting it at home. So that remains to be seen. I'd say the odds are against them, and Bayern would go in as favourites to take out that tie.
A little bit more love for Georgia, who Derek spoke about a couple of weeks ago in stoppage time, and some great quotes this week from manager Willy Sanyol as they look towards their group of Turkey, Portugal and Czechia after beating Greece on penalties. He says, "This qualification for the Euros is not just about football. It's also a way for the country to say, hey, Georgia does exist. Maybe we're not a big country, but now people will know Georgia is a country that can matter." He also said, "When we qualified and we were celebrating, that's one of the first things my players said. Please, Willie, we don't want to go to Germany for shopping or tourism." And I said, "Well, that's great because I already know Germany by heart, so I don't need to do any tourism there." So very ambitious, Edge.
Hugely ambitious. No tourism there. That's funny, isn't it?
And maybe to close, we will have a look at the as well, and good luck as well to the Mariners who head to Kyrgyzstan. I think with the well wishes of all in the Australian football community behind them, they've got Abdish Atakant in the first leg of the AFC Cup semi-final on Wednesday. Their treble remains alive. They beat Western United 2-0 this week to edge the Phoenix for another 7 days at least. The Phoenix are taking the points against the Victory in the 95th minute, so the neck and neck between those two and awesome. And to close for the last couple of weeks, the Phoenix have the Jets away and then MacArthur at home. David Dome of the Phoenix has said, kids go free, so pack the cake tin for that one. And then the Mariners have Adelaide at home and the Jets away in an F3 derby. So Edge, Rob Stanton's Newcastle side, who are in form after two wins, still have a huge hand to play in shaping this comp.
They do, and it'll be an exciting end to the game. But what about the Central Coast Mariners who've got a trek all the way to Kyrgyzstan? And then if they win that match, AFC Cup, obviously, or they get through the leg, the tie, they've got to face a final in the Middle East. They've got to face a final probably in either Dubai or Doha because of the rules of the competition is that West Asia and East Asia host it on a rotational basis. It's not so they've actually got two big away fixtures in this competition, but it's just exciting. An A-League team has the opportunity to go this deep in the secondary competition, which I think is finding its feet as something really interesting, Willem.
I think it's been a really nice story. That was a bit of a side narrative early in the season, but as they've progressed and progressed emphatically, the toughest opponent they've faced in this competition so far has been MacArthur. So, yeah, I think a lot of hopes, despite the fact that no one really knows a thing about Atakant, I think there's a lot of hopes that they'll win this and then go on to that final. And we've seen Mark Jackson a couple of times rotate his squad and win three games in a week across various competitions. So I think there's a lot of optimism. So good luck to him.
It's a long way to
go. Have you been?
Yeah, it's a long way to go, Kyrgyzstan, to Bishkek. So, they'll have the goat trail on the way there. It's a huge challenge for the club, but good luck to them. It'll be a wonderful experience for everybody involved.
How far have they come? I mean, amazing from, what was it, three wooden spoons in a row we were talking about last week to winning the title and travelling the world looking for silverware. It's a great story, isn't it?
And also a little bit of scuttlebutt that there is an impending investor in Central Coast Mariners too to help share the load, which, you know, is probably a sign of how successful they've been. I mean, their men are doing extremely well and the women are in the semi-finals, I mean, in their first season. How good. Well done to everybody at Central Coast, Richard Peel, Mark Jackson, Emily Husband and everybody else.
Yeah.
Hopefully that investor's got a mate for the mob up the road, Edge.
Hope so.
All right, boys, let's wrap it up. We've got stoppage time to come later in the week. We can expand on a few of these things. Thank you, Michael.
No worries, Rob.
Well done.
Thank you, Roberto.
Adam, thank you again. Mate, he stays behind the glass, doesn't turn that volume button on very often, but he is the maestro of box-to-box for sure, making sure that the
show comes together. What about Pasquale? Are you going to give him a bit of a thank you?
Oh, okay. Well, for our listeners who are very familiar with this show and who have been listening for a long, long time, our old mate Paddy Panetta is listening to the show. He's observing this week because Adam's going to take a little break in a couple of weeks' time, and the great Pat Panetta, the Italian football expert that is going to step back into the box-to-box podcast chair and seam this all together in a couple of weeks' time. So no pressure on Pasquale.
Well, there's no bigger event to support in Australia than Pasquale Panetta.
Oh, no.
And his favourite meal, of course, is spaghetti bolognese, Rob.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's got great recipes for that. I mean, we could go on forever talking about Pat's food knowledge. That is incredible. Paddy is behind the mic. Maybe we'll get him off the mic when we talk in a couple of weeks' time. We've done that before, thrown a few people under the bus. All right, boys, Paddy, farewell. Say anara to you. To our listeners out there, thanks again for listening to Box. We really appreciate it. Stoppage time and offside. We keep promising you a new episode. It is going to come, and boy, it's going to be a cracker when it does. Make sure you tweet us at Box2BoxNTS and follow us on X. Like us on Facebook if you haven't already. And join us throughout the week as our podcast drop. And we go from one end of the pitch to the other in the World Game.